That is a song as synonymous with Cape Town as the shape of Table Mountain is. But where does it actually come from? And what is unique about its history? How did it influence other forms of music here in the Cape? Joining me on the couch today is a man who has, I think, spent a large part of his life exploring his love of Cape history and culture. Dr. Valmont Lane is a former director of the District 6 Museum and quite recently graduated with his PhD from the University of the Western Cape, having studied the history of Guma in Cape Town and its relationship with Cape Jazz. Absolutely delighted to have you with us today, and congratulations on the PhD, first of all.
Thank you so much, and it's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit more about the nature of your degree and the topic you chose to explore.
The topic I chose comes from work I did. I've always been fascinated with music. I'm a musician myself, and at the District 6 Museum, I had the privilege of working with the oral histories of the place. And it just struck me how important, and we forget not so much the big spectacle of the of Guma music, the carnival, the Klopsa carnival. Of course, everybody knows that. But what role that music played in sustaining a community. People, you know, young men stand on the street and they sing very often in harmony, or the pop songs of their time, if you think about the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So I was interested in how, and I still am interested in how music helps people to make sense of the world around them. And for me, that was what was so amazing about Guma music, is that I wanted to talk a little bit more about how it helps to make social reality more tolerable and more interesting for people.
I mean, it's fascinating. This, as you mentioned, the oral history is such a strong tradition in South Africa, and yet there are huge gaps in so many of our histories because only certain histories were deemed worthy of recording and researching and categorizing. So there are these big holes that we have to now try and go back and fill in. But it must be quite difficult to fill them in, given the absence of documented history.
Absolutely. So a big part of what I'm trying to do with my thesis is say, well, we don't have a lot of empirical information, hard information, but we can try different ways of making sense of what we do know. So I did a chapter on Dakom di Alibama, in fact, and I tried to recreate what the world looked like to ordinary people living in that time. And it's amazing what you, if you think about it, District 6 was hardly 20 years old when that song, when the events around that song happened. And you know, the, I think the folklore of that song is well known, that there was a ship that came here during the American Civil War. It was called the CSS Alabama. And that song was such a big news event in the city, because it took a, people knew about it for a year. We knew about the war, but about that ship, it was doing quite a few raids and patrolling, and trying to ships, find northern ships to basically, it used to kidnap ships and take whatever they had. So it, it was a way, it's a form of, I guess, what you could call terrorism or piracy.
Piracy of sorts,
But it became famous in Cape Town. So there was a lot of talk about the ship. And I think what's also important is alongside the ship is the beginning of American culture coming to Cape Town. So sheet music, it wasn't radio or records or anything like that. So music came here on ships with sailors or through commerce. People brought sheet music because for middle class people aspiring to be sophisticated, especially for young women, it was a thing to play the piano and to read sheet music. And what was the pop music of the time? It was minstrel music from the USA and quadrilles and squares and all kinds of European popular dances, ballroom dances. That's the underpinnings of Guma music, because those we know about the Guma drum and the slave picnics, but we don't know so much about, and we seldom talk about how important European music was, the sheet music to Cape Town. There were bands in the city, professional slave musicians who could read music very often, or who were taught to pick up on it and to do something with it. So very often you'd have musicians playing for formal European or colonial events for the for local community. But those musicians would then go, in the Caribbean, they call it the camp quadrille. Here we called it sopflase. In other words, people take that music and they do something else with it when they're entertaining themselves. So when they go back to wherever they live, District 6, for example, was 20 years old in 1863. Or around about 20 years old. So it was a new settlement. You can imagine what people did then with the music. They added something. We call it, in Cape Town, there's this word that comes from Malayu, akal or akulchi. It's an Afrikaans word now, but it comes from that. And it speaks about how people invent with what they have and how they make sense of it through innovation or invention. So the rhythmic element of Guma music, I believe, is something that is both unique to the Cape because of the particular confluence of languages and cultures that mixed here, but it's also not unique because if you listen to quadrille derived music from the Caribbean or from other parts of the world, you'll see there's a similar feeling. You know, there's the samba in Brazil. There's music from, there's zouk or other music from South America or the Caribbean. The vibe is very similar to the Guma beat.
You've just reminded me, listening to you, I instantly thought of when the Alvin Ailey Dance Company was here a year or two ago, one of their pieces based on a spiritual number. There was a certain rhythm, and at the time I remember thinking, gosh, it sounds a little bit like the Klopse here. So it's interesting what you said, same but different, really, as we've done with so many things with our cuisine as well. For you personally, I mean, when were you first exposed to Guma? What's your earliest memory?
I grew up on the Cape Flats, so there was always Christmas bands or church brigades, and I think all those things feed into what we call Guma music. I don't think of Guma music as a single style of music. It's more the way, for me, it's much more important to think about it as the way ordinary people, poor people, make it their own. So they take every element they can, you know, and we still do that. We do that with pop music now. I mean, there is no surprise to me, for example, that in the 70s, Latin music was very, very big in Cape Town. People listen to Brazilian sambas, and it becomes part of the ballroom scene. So that, for me, it's not so much a description of a music, but the innovation that people use or harness to make it. In other words, to think of vernacular as a verb rather than as a noun, something that's always in the making.
I love that description. You mentioned the drum earlier. Just for the sake of those who might not know the story of the Guma drum itself, won't you just share it a little bit with us?
It comes directly, I think, from the economy of the Cape. The Cape is built on an economy importing slaves from other places, and there's reason for that that we won't go into, except to say that that's what makes it similar to other places in the world, to Brazil, to the Caribbean, and to the eastern part of the Indian Ocean. Nowadays, there's a lot more interest going into thinking about how the Cape is connected with the East again. So the drum is very similar in build to a wine barrel. And although I haven't seen a evidence trail of this, I think it's kind of goes without saying that given the wine industry in Cape Town, the fact that the workers in Cape Town, the slave workers, were often semi-skilled or skilled artisans. They were bricklayers and tailors and barrel makers. And, you know, people were engaged, unlike in the US, for example, or South America, where workers were doing hard labor in cotton fields. Here, there was an element of skill in many of the slave workers. So the Guma drum is a very beautiful symbol of the local economy of the Cape, because it's shaped or designed after a wine barrel.
Fascinating. For those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest in studio is Dr. Valmond Lane, who is currently based at UWC, a former director of the District 6 Museum, chatting to us about his research into the history of Guma in Cape Town. Specifically, you also looked at Guma's relationship with Cape Jazz.
Yes.
Valmond, tell us a little bit more about that aspect.
So that was, again, I think one of the things that inspired me. In fact, when I was a teenager, sort of going into my early 20s, I came across a group. There was Robbie Jansen, Basil Coutsi. It's important to remember at that time, most of the musicians we take for granted now were in exile and nobody had ever encountered them. Abdullah Ibrahim, Maria Makeba, etc. So when I grew up, this music was forbidden. We couldn't hear it on the radio. But there was one band besides Robbie Jansen, especially, and Basil Coutsi, who really moved me because they played a very exciting style of Guma. And that was a group called The Genuines. Hilton Schilder was in it, Mac McKenzie. And this group played, I didn't realize it at the time, they were playing punk with a Guma beat and marketing it as something, as a kind of new contemporary sound. For me, that was amazing because, I guess this is what inspired me to ask questions about Daakom Di Alibama, because it's now the anthem, if you like, the unofficial anthem of Cape Town and of the Klopse. But at some point, it must have been new. Nobody knew where it came from. It's sort of it's a mystery how it was, who composed it or why. But the fact that that song is so popular and continues to be popular and well-known more than 100 years later tells you something about the time when it was recorded and about why. So I wanted to know a little bit about that. And I think that what I come to is that Guma is not only music from ancient times. It's also contemporary. And if you think of it like that, then Dar Kom Di Alibama makes a little bit more sense, because there was a moment in Cape Town's history when this big newsworthy event happened, but it was also a moment when other things were bubbling under the surface. The Afrikaans language, for example. Was there such a thing as a colored person? Where does this notion of identity come from, and why does the song attach to identity? For me, it's not the question of identity is not that important. I know it is for a lot of people, but it's more the mechanisms or the processes that lead to identity formation. So I was trying to ask those kinds of questions in thinking about Guma music and the history of Cape Town.
Well, we've got somebody on the line who wants to engage with you. Tyrone's given us a call from Kales River. Tyrone, I think you're singing along in the background, because this is music you grew up with as well.
First of all, hello to Valmont. You might recognize the voice.
Hello, Tyrone.
We went to school together at Windermere in the 80s, Valmont Lane.
Oh, yes.
My goodness.
Wonderful what you're doing. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
I was always the radical guy at school with our magazines. So yes. You're doing a fantastic job. Our history is absolutely unexplored and unexplained, and I love what you're doing. Yeah. That's all I need to say.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Tyrone, thanks. We'll let you keep the stories of what he got up to at school under wraps for today. Thank you for that call, though. If anybody else would like to engage, we've got a few minutes in hand. You can call us, as Tyrone did, on 021-446-0567 or drop a voice note to 072-567-1567. I keep thinking back to that lovely comment you made about seeing vernacular as a verb, not a noun, that it is the act of creating something that is your own. And listening to you, I mean, it strikes me it must have held such power for people who had very few choices in many cases about ownership of anything when they themselves were considered the possessions of other people. It's fascinating to think of saying, well, I'm going to steal from that and take from that and make this mine. There's something rebellious about that that I love.
And I think there's such a wide spectrum. I think for me, the messaging around Guma music is important. And as Tyrone is saying, we know so little about it, and our messaging is so limited and superficial that I think it's important, and I hope other people will pick up on doing research around this. For example, just to give you a quick example, I remember doing an interview with a man, I think he's passed now, Mr. Hannibal. Mr. Hannibal came from the Christmas band tradition, and I asked him what's his favorite memory about the Christmas bands. And he said to me something that's always stayed with me. The one day his band was having an anniversary, or it must have been 25th or something like that, and they were marching through District 6, and a rival band was also marching through the area. And when the rival band saw them, they all stopped what they were doing, and they made a little, what do you call it, a sort of a opening. And they let them march through as a mark of honor. And I think those little gestures are so beautiful, because it reminds you that, as I was saying, about the fact that this is about ordinary life and about people finding their dignity, making their own dignity, even if the state or other people are continuously trying to undermine or denigrate them. So that for me is the beauty of what music making can represent, and how it can bring people out of the state of oppression that they find themselves in.
When you've mentioned some very famous names, Robbie Jansen, Basil Mannenberg, Kutsia, Abdullah Ibrahim, is anyone making Guma now that you'd like to mention? Or for somebody, I mean, a couple of listeners are loving the interview and saying, how do I get to explore this music more? Where do I find it? Who do I look for?
It's everywhere. I mean, they are such amazing, globally respectable musicians in Cape Town now. Think of Kyle Shepherd. There was just a gig. I'm sadly missed it with Vuma Levine. So I think those guys are working with the spirit of it, with the idea of vernacularizing, but they're taking it in all kinds of interesting directions. And for me, that's wonderful. The more we do that, I think the healthier our musical culture is going to be.
Dr. Valmont Lane, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for popping in to join us this afternoon.
And thank
you so much. Look forward to the continued exploration that goes with your research. I'm glad to hear that you continue with your research at UWC. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.